Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Finding a way to measure the job performance of the K-12 classroom teacher has been the subject of a great deal of debate for some time. How do you come up with an instrument that provides a reliable, quantifiable measure of a teacher's ability to not only help students absorb the material, but to instill in them a true appreciation of creative and critical thinking skills? Now there's a consortium of universities and governmental entities in the state that is honing in on a way to judge the novice teacher in particular. The Teaching Performance Assessment Consortium of Tennessee, or TPAC-TN, includes the Ready to Teach Assessment Task Force, among other entities, and the coordinator of that task force is our Associate Dean of the College of Behavioral and Health Sciences, Dr. Rick Short. Rick, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Using as little bureaucraties as possible, because there are numerous entities involved in this effort, let's start out with explaining the task force in particular and its role as a consortium member, and then we'll get to how all this is going to improve teaching.
Very good. Tennessee, in 2006, became very concerned about how to respond to the national criticisms of teacher preparation, concerning not only the preparation itself, but how do we guarantee that teachers actually enter the classroom with the skills that they need to perform. That's a comprehensive initiative that ended up being called Ready to Teach and being focused primarily on the Tennessee Board of Regents universities. There are six of those. We established as a component of that larger initiative an assessment part for the purpose of determining whether our efforts were successful at the individual student candidate level. We worked on that for about a year and a half and developed what I thought were some pretty good and comprehensive techniques. At that point, we became aware of a national initiative that, surprisingly enough, looked very similar to our ideas. I guess kind of great minds think alike. That initiative was a collaboration of Stanford University, the Council of Chief State School Officers, and the American Association for Colleges of Teacher Education. They have implemented or are implementing pilots in about 20-something states now. And we were ahead of most of those states because of our work with Ready to Teach. We partnered with those states and with that national initiative. And in the state, we partnered with Vanderbilt University and the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. So it truly encompasses the entire state, which is a very powerful and somewhat novel component of the larger consortium. Within that context, then, we represent a point, an advance point of a large national initiative.
When you say we, do you mean the task force or the consortium?
The task force as a part of the consortium. The task force and the state initiative. When I'm talking about the state initiative, I'm actually talking about the Ready to Teach component, which was our smaller group, plus Vanderbilt University, plus the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. That's the state initiative.
Now, this is targeted toward novice teachers, so define a novice teacher for us as a term. Where is this person in his or her professional development or his or her career track?
We really are focusing on students at the completion of their program. Our performance assessment initiative addresses and provides a capstone experience for teachers coming out of teacher preparation programs. The Ready to Teach initiative has a single guarantee, and that is that every teacher that we produce in the six TBR universities will be ready to perform at a skill level that's satisfactory for every superintendent in the state. That doesn't mean that the teacher will be a master, but that teacher will have minimal skills certain minimal skills that will be the ones that are needed in the schools.
Are we talking about what used to be called a student teacher? Or are we talking about someone who has completed their bachelor's and has gotten their certification?
No, we're talking about what used to be called a student teacher. We are calling them residents now because of our emphasis on authentic learning and school-based preparation.
Okay. How is this instrument going to be different from prior methods of assessing a novice teacher's abilities? Back in what I suppose would have been my grandparents' generation, I think it was basically the principal or the superintendent sitting at the back of the room and watching the teacher teach and then making a quasi-objective, quasi-subjective assessment. And things are a little bit different now.
They clearly are, Jenna, and we certainly are respecting that tradition because there were some very powerful strengths to that tradition in terms of actually evaluating a candidate teaching. We've evolved from that point to in two ways. One way is to rely more on paper and pencil tasks than the old model that you're talking about. And the second way is to rely on course outcomes so that it becomes decentralized and associated with a sequence of checkpoints. We still have those checkpoints, but we truly believe that in some ways we're going back to the model you're talking about where we determine whether a student teacher, a candidate, a resident meets our criteria by actually watching that candidate perform. Now, where it differs from the old model is we're very concerned to make sure, because this is a high-stakes decision, whether somebody should be credentialed to teach, whether our product actually meets the standard that we set. So we're very concerned about things like reliability and validity, whether we're consistent in these ratings across people, and whether what we're measuring actually does measure what principals and superintendents are interested in. So we've brought in technology and we brought in psychometrics so that we no longer simply observe. Now our observation is video recorded. They are not edited, but they can be shortened to emphasize the skills that we are seeking to measure. There also is another component in this assessment, which requires a considerable amount of input from the resident, the student teacher, the candidate, in writing, describing his or her planning, his or her attention to student characteristics and context, describing his or her assessment techniques with examples.
And his then, or her rationale for doing things the way that he or she does it.
Which then must appear on the videotape. So we have kind of a convergence of what actually is occurring and the thinking behind what actually is occurring. Then we have multiple raters scoring these things using a very comprehensive rubric.
And who are those raters?
They are trained. Now, again, the larger consortium is led by Stanford University, which has been doing this work for about 10 years now. We also are using their rubrics, and we are using many of their materials and procedures because they, again, they're the leaders right now, and we're a constituent of their consortium. They provide the training, and we're at the stage of the process right now where we're actually sending individuals to Stanford for intensive training and calibration so that we know that their ratings will be consistent across them. They'll come back in January or February and provide training to many of the educators in the state.
So understanding you correctly, the novice teacher's videotape will be judged in part, at least by people from outside the state of Tennessee?
Not really. We could, and I suspect that a sample of them will, to make sure that our scores would match other skilled observers' scores. You remember, we want to make sure that what we're measuring is really what's important and that we're reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But Most of those ratings will be done in-state, but there will be multiple raters. That is, we won't rely on a single. You remember the old model that you mentioned a year ago, a little while ago, having to do with a principal or a superintendent or a supervising teacher sitting in the back of the room and filling out a rating form. That's fine, and that's a good model, except the product or what is being rated is gone. You can't really go back and look at it again. And if there are not two people there, if the rater, and I'm not saying they are, but there is the possibility that, that the rater might be biased or might lose attention or whatever and miss critical things or misinterpret critical things about the behavior that is being rated. So we want to obviate those concerns by having a permanent product with supporting materials rated by people typically that know the candidate, that know the resident. So they probably would not be rated by outsiders.
So then after the novice teacher is rated, what happens then?
The teacher, again, remember this, once we put it in place, and it'll be a couple of years before we put it in place, this will be a high-stakes assessment. The teacher will need to perform at a certain minimal level on the rubrics in order to gain our endorsement for licensure, for completion of our program. However, this is also a learning experience because, as I mentioned, even though it is a capstone, we will have checkpoints along the way. There are other checkpoints after the rating. So if a teacher, a resident, has deficiency or would like to improve a performance, there will be a window of time where that individual could go back and re-perform components or the whole measure if needed to show the skills that he or she has. We're confident that everyone, because our programs are changing to make sure this happens, every one of our residents will demonstrate very well the skills that they need for introductory teaching. But they'll have opportunities to show that more than once if they need to.
Do K through 12 teachers right now have any sort of a, new teachers, that is to say, have any sort of a probationary period in the state of Tennessee?
They do. I believe it's a 3-year probationary period. There's a lot of change occurring in Tennessee and nationally in teacher preparation. In some ways, teacher preparation is becoming more flexible and broader, and often occurs not in teacher preparation programs. The state of Tennessee has endorsed alternative licensure, as most states have, which does not require completion of a teacher preparation program, but rather completion of a content degree and subsequent abbreviated preparation and there's quality there. I'm not suggesting that the quality is not there, but it doesn't occur at a university necessarily. So it's not associated with a teacher preparation program.
Will the novice teachers know in advance what kind of standards they have to meet in order to do their very best on the assessment?
Absolutely. And we've made it particularly easy because the standards that they will have to meet are the standards that will have to be met once they're teachers. The state of Tennessee has a framework for evaluating teachers that every superintendent and principal uses at the appropriate times through observation. We've adopted those as our outcome measures, understanding that they don't have to be masters, but they do have to perform at a level that superintendents would be happy with at the introductory level.
And I would imagine that this instrument being used for judging novice teachers would be different in some ways than the instrument that is used to judge teachers who have been on the job for some years.
And there are two reasons for that. That is accurate, but there are two reasons for that. In the first place, the level of performance would have to be clearly lower. It would have to be at an appropriate level, but it would have to be lower. And the second thing is that we're making a considerable investment in this model. an investment of our time and expertise. Our people are going through extensive training, and each performance assessment will take about 2 hours to manage, to score. If you think in the public schools, a principal evaluating all of his or her teachers likely would not have that kind of time. But we want to invest that time on the front end of their careers, so we know that they have at least the modicum, the beginnings of those skills, which should make the principal or superintendent raters later down the way their job easier. But that would be an abbreviated test. It'd be very different, I think. But the dimensions would be the same.
Right. And if the novice teacher receives an assessment where there are deficiencies or things that need to be corrected, what tools are available at his or her disposal in order for that teacher to improve himself or herself and correct those deficiencies?
Good question. We are particularly concerned as we change our teacher preparation programs to make sure that our teachers are well supervised, well mentored. Now, this is in some ways a big change. We've always done a good job in this area, but this now is a strong emphasis that our residents will be working individually with skilled teachers as well as skilled professors, people who have recent expert teaching experience, that will be working with our residents through their entire teacher preparation career, so that the assessment itself will not be a surprise. It will simply be the culmination of a rather long process. If there are deficiencies, then there may be, that mentor will be right there. Both the professor mentor and the teacher mentor will be right there, and likely will be the one scoring the protocol as well.
Will they get one-on-one guidance?
Absolutely, absolutely. But that won't be different. I think that's the point I'm making, because they will be receiving one-on-one guidance before. Mm-hmm. Then they will be rated on the performance assessment, and then should they have difficulties, their feedback will be quick, and the support, the mentoring, the supervision will be individual and prompt as well.
Okay.
So it's a great model. I think that we're really excited about, even with the investment that will be required, we're excited about the possibilities for improving our students and supporting our students.
If a novice teacher gets back an assessment and it shows some deficiencies, but the novice teacher feels that the assessment is not justified, does that teacher have some kind of recourse?
Certainly so. And there will be an appeal process. There always has to be built in, in fairness to the teacher or the resident, an appeal process to the director of the program. And there will be options for review and repeat of the assessment if that is needed. We're trying to be just as, we are as student-centered as any program I know. We really are working for this, even though it's high stakes, to be a success experience for every one of our students. We simply want them to demonstrate what they already know and what they know mm-hmm. and can do. So this won't be a surprise. It will be somewhat stressful because evaluation typically is, but it will be a feedback experience that should be supportive. If there are perceptions of unfairness or the need to reconsider, those mechanisms are built in as well.
Even so, this assessment is not, quote-unquote, a done deal. Am I right? This is still a very much a work in progress?
Absolutely, and that's true nationally as well. We want to make sure that we get it right, and that's crucial. Because of the nature of the test, the difficulty of putting in place this type of assessment, and the importance to the students to make sure that it's an experience that's meaningful and valuable to them as well. For that reason, there actually will be a couple of years of piloting this type of procedure. We have 10 years of data from California. We're just starting out in Tennessee, so we'll take advantage of and benefit from the data from California, but we will be gathering data and analyzing data and honing our techniques and our procedures for at least 2 years.
How will the colleges of education at the institutions that are part of this consortium that have colleges of education like MTSU and Peabody, these are the schools that teach the teachers how to teach, in short, how will they get feedback once the assessment is up and running, that will enable them to take a look at the assessments statistically to find out how they can do a better job of teaching the teachers to teach?
Again, a wonderful question. We see this, and we formulated it from the beginning as being not only an individual assessment tool to let us know that individual residents have the skills and knowledge to actually teach, but also as a program evaluation tool so that we'll be taking individual cases and scoring them, blinding them so they'll be confidential, scoring them by a centrally located set of evaluators so that we can determine that there is validity in the individual scores. But in aggregate, we'll also be able to draw some conclusions about the quality of the program for their purposes, not for ours. We're not looking to make any determinations about quality of program for our purposes, but in order to let them know, because of the pieces of the assessment, which include, as I mentioned, planning, mm-hmm. attention to context and individual differences, mm-hmm. assessment, the broad characteristics of teaching, they'll be able to look in aggregate at whether their assessment preparation is stronger or weaker, where they need to improve maybe their planning, so that this should serve as a very nice and well-integrated program evaluation technique for them as well.
Once the assessment is integrated and is being used, how do you factor into an overall judgment of the assessment differences in demographics where the teacher is teaching, differences in the amount of money that a particular school system has to fund its schools, and things of that nature that affect a teacher's overall efficiency?
One of the major areas that I just mentioned related to how these will be evaluated is context and individual differences, so that we understand that there's wide variance across school systems and across classrooms in the characteristics of the students and the characteristics of the environment. Mm-hmm. Every teacher has to attend to those characteristics. Mm-hmm. What we're evaluating is how well they're taking those into account. Now, keep in mind, we're not evaluating this at the end only. They will be in the schools for a considerable amount of time before they ever get to this assessment, which is a capstone experience. Mm-hmm. So we will be mentoring, supervising, coaching them on taking into account contextual variables and individual differences throughout that sequence. Mm-hmm. Now, the second part of my answer to that question, and it's an important one, is that our schools are our crucial partners in this endeavor. I said that we have to meet the needs of the superintendents for our graduates. The way we ascertain that is to involve the superintendents in their schools as integral partners from the beginning. So those contextual variables, those individual differences, we'll be sensitive to all along the way, because teachers, principals, superintendents, supervisors in the school districts will be giving us feedback mm-hmm. and input at every step of the way to make sure that we're attending to those things. That's a very important part of what we're doing.
As someone who's in the education profession yourself, and my father was a teacher and a coach in high school, and I don't pretend to be knowledgeable about pedagogy or methodologies when it comes to teaching, but I sense just as a layperson looking on the outside looking in that there is always a balancing act going on within a teacher's head or an administrator's head between quantifiable, measurable instruments of performance and good old-fashioned gut instinct, because we are talking about people dealing with people, and especially with the little kids, it is a personal relationship. It's a role model. It's somebody looking up to an authority figure. How do you balance that in your own consciousness as an educator, and what kinds of discussions have been going on within the consortium about this ongoing yin and yang, if you will?
What you're talking about, I think, Jenna, is what is called an education ease dispositions, how student teachers and teachers demonstrate that they care about kids. Do they have a positive attitude? Do they love teaching? Do they really want to see their kids succeed? And do they believe that kids can succeed? Those are attitudinal and cognitive variables that go beyond skill and knowledge. I mentioned earlier that this is a capstone experience, but there are multiple opportunities throughout the course of our residencies, which are going to be school-based, they are authentic, that will address these knowledge-related but not knowledge-central kinds of areas. They are very important, and they are acknowledged to be so nationally as well as in our state. But we believe them to be important enough that we will assess those separately through our supervisors and our mentors.
Do you have to alter the assessment in any way, tweak it slightly for different types of classroom experiences? I'm thinking right now of special education and advanced placement courses on different ends of the spectrum. Do you have to tweak it for those unique types of teaching experiences or not?
We are tweaking even more than that. What Stanford found and what we are learning in our work is that there's an even greater level of specificity than just taking into account individual differences, which is a strong suit of special education. We have learned that you have to actually construct different ways of evaluating teaching based on content area, so that there are math performance assessments and language arts performance assessments. Every content area that is licensed in the state will have its own assessment, its own rubrics. Now, certainly they'll have commonalities,
right,
but
it'll also have features unique to that particular discipline.
Yes, and those will be determined by people in those content areas, both at the professorial level and the public school teaching area. So again, we're making sure that there's a mesh there, but we're being very specific to make sure that we found empirically that we have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Level is important as well. As you suggested, elementary students are very different from high school students. So we're having to do elementary, middle, and high school levels as well to ensure that we're taking into account the specificities, the uniqueness of content areas. Now, special education is an area that Stanford and the larger consortium has addressed, but we believe we're going to be able to take some leadership in this area. They've done a wonderful job in the content areas and the levels that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't moved as far along as we believe that we can. We want to contribute to the consortium as well. And special education, we believe, is an area that we can be really strong in, and we can really make a contribution. Attention to those individual differences that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Attending to strengths and weaknesses in the individual child, and strategies strengths and weaknesses, again, in the individual child.
They say when you get a bunch of economists into a room, it's impossible to get them all to agree on one thing. vis-a-vis the consortium and the task force, how do you get educators who probably come from widely different personal experiences in the classroom and widely different philosophies of pedagogy about how to teach to agree on the specifics of one particular instrument that would be used statewide?
Well, keep in mind it's a performance assessment. What we have to agree on is what good teaching looks like. Now, admittedly, as I've just mentioned, there are differences along the content areas, so that maybe English teachers would be slightly different in what they would think would be good teaching compared to math teachers or science teachers. But the content that we're measuring, that we're assessing, is a performance. It's not paper and pencil. And even though we have had strong discussions about what we actually want to look for, there has been some commonality that you have to plan for example. You have to plan for instruction before you do it, that you have to assess, and you have to assess well and assess what students really know in relation to the plan. So there are some broad commonalities on which we have been able to agree, as long as we take into account level and content area. An area that has not been well developed is that area of context that I mentioned a minute ago, in individual differences, and we're working on that. Mm-hmm. And because we're not as far along, and because that's somewhat more nebulous than content area,
yeah,
we're having to work through. But we've brought together people, and we are bringing together people to sit and talk through that, and we'll talk until we get it right.
And what is your target date for implementation again?
The target date for full implementation of the model is spring 2014. So we have about, 4 years now, 3.5 years.
If educators or budding educators or even parents concerned about their kids want to know more about the work of the consortium, who should they contact?
Right now they should contact me. My email address is rshort@mtsu.edu, and I will get you to the right person if I can't answer the question that you have.
Thank you. Dr. Rick Short, Associate Dean of the College of Behavioral and Health Sciences at MTSU. Rick, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please be sure and join us at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're available on iTunes.